Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Good evening, everyone. Finally, a nice weekend. Finally, a very, very nice weekend going into our Memorial Day weekend. Memorial Day, of course, the day to commemorate those people who died while serving our country in the armed forces. The holiday started in 1868, and now it is celebrated the last Monday of every May. And it's a nice holiday for us. It starts our holiday vacation. We can now wear white shoes. I know, Roger, you've been waiting to wear your white shoes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The airy ones, you know, not a deck shoe. I don't like the canvas deck shoe.
No.
I like the Italian kind of open weave shoe.
Okay.
Yeah. Because
okay.
It helps air out, you know, as you're walking along. And
well, you'll be wearing them next week. So
well, of course.
So we get a good picture of them. Hey, listen, you know, I did something. Jerry, I got for one of his birthdays, I got him this DNA test thing, you know, the MyHeritage whatever it was.
Sure.
And he was really excited about it. And I kind of was like, you know, I really don't care. I know I'm Italian. I know I'm some German. But other than that, it doesn't matter too much to me at all. Mm-hmm. But Jerry was really excited. And he turned out to be more than just Italian. He was Greek. And I think he had a little bit of actually African-American in him. So it was kind of funny that you kind of learn that we're all part of the same group of people, but mm-hmm. I just got mine back.
Oh, you did do yours.
I did,
okay.
And I turned out to be 42% Southern Europe, 12% Eastern Europe, and then 39% North and West Europe. So I think all of those are the German and the Italian. But I'm 4.8 Ashkenazi Jewish.
Mazel tov.
Mazel tov. Is that the best? And so now,
well, and that could, from the parts that you say were Western Europe and Eastern Europe, I mean, it could come from that, maybe mixed in with the family.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know how they determine all those things, but now it makes me interested in knowing where the Jews kind of came mm-hmm. and where they were. And, you know, I think the whole thing is fascinating.
Have you ever done a family history?
I actually did. I had a genealogist in my family who actually went back and found birth records in Germany for my grandparents on my mother's side and also birth records on my father's side. And so I knew that I went back to those places, but certainly not this interesting twist. And I find it fascinating. And now I've got more holidays to celebrate. And
there you go.
I'm very excited about it.
Excellent.
Have you had yours done?
Actually, no. I've kind of on my own traced our family back to, I think it was like 1830 or 1840. A ship's manifest of a 13-year-old, Van Badisch, Van being as in the German Van Badisch.
Right.
A young girl, I think about 13 years old, came over on a ship from Antwerp, but that doesn't mean she was from Antwerp. And I've done some research, and our family came over, the Badisch family, my mother's side of the family. First generation, my mother was first generation in her family American. Her older brother and sister were born in Russia. But then the Badisch side of the family came over to the New Jersey area and then kind of split. And one group came across to Chicago, my dad's immediate family. And then there was another group of Badishes that went south into Virginia, down to Tennessee, and then eventually ended up in Denver, Colorado.
Interesting.
And my dad and I have both tried to contact them, and I guess we're the black sheep of the family. I don't know.
But you're the black sheep with the white shoes.
Yeah, with the white shoes.
We're going to continue our conversation, and hopefully we'll have Bill Zwecker on the phone. Bill Zwecker, one of the icons in Chicago for celebrity gossip and all those good scoops. He and I are colleagues at Fox, and we see each other all the time. And I want to talk to him about several things, including the Obama film production company that is being formed, and I think that's going to be very interesting to see what they're going to produce. And then we're going to be talking about Harvey Weinstein and what he knows about the scandal and how people are reacting in Hollywood about his arrest. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. This is the Karen Conti Show, and this little episode, we're going to be taking calls pretty much the full 2 hours. So if you have legal questions of any type that you'd like some direction on, please give me a call here. Or if you have seen any news stories that are of interest to you from a legal standpoint or otherwise, I'm happy to discuss those too. The number is 312-981-7200, and feel free to text me at that same number, 312-981-7200. I got a text yesterday. I read about the 30-year-old who was evicted by the parents, the 30-year-old who was evicted by his parents. I don't know if you all saw that news story, kind of a long-haired kid. He's been sleeping on the couch since he graduated college. And it's really an interesting story. And this particular texter said, I understand that parents can't be forced to legally support their adult children, but I hear all the time about parents who are court-ordered to pay their kids' college expenses. So what's the difference? And that is a very interesting question, and one that, as a lawyer and a lawyer who practices in the area of family law, I get that all the time. And interestingly, many states have passed laws that say that if you are divorcing or you are divorced and your child wants to go to college, that the court can order that the parents pay for the college. Basically, it's what you can pay. Basically, they look at the income of both parties. They look at the needs of the child. Maybe if the child can get loans and things like that, that also gets taken into effect. But some states, that's not the law. I think Ohio is a state that does not require parents to pay for college, if I'm not mistaken. But interestingly, if you are from an intact family, meaning your parents are not getting divorced, you really have no right as a child to have your parents pay for college. But if your parents are divorced or divorcing, then the court can make a determination that your parents have to pay, and they usually do. So even for parents who are not making a whole lot of money, and you know how much college is these days, I think U of I is about $32,000 a year, and that's a state school, courts are regularly ordering that parents pay. But this case was a very interesting case because it almost seemed like it was unreal. It almost seemed like a reality show or something, because how could parents allow this to happen, number one, and how could a kid be so entitled and so justified that he would force his parents to incur attorney's fees and have a televised episode of the court? I just don't know how that works. Jerry, you want to weigh in on that? I know you do.
I tried to stay at home until I was 45 years old. I love my mother's cooking. She did my laundry and made my bed. But at about 19, my father said that he would give me $10,000 to elope. Of course, I didn't have a girlfriend at the time, so it didn't really matter. Went to college like everybody else. And since then, I've been out on my own. I mean, I'm an old goat, and I'm very cynical, and I do not... I don't understand the younger generation, but I think every older generation says they don't understand the younger generation.
Yeah, and I guess this is part of the whole millennial thing they say, but I guess I just don't understand, because the minute that I went away to college, it wasn't like my home life was so bad, but I just really liked making my own decisions. I like having popcorn for dinner. I like, you know, staying out till 2 a.m. if I wanted to. I liked, you know, all of the things that you don't do when you are an intact family. And, you know, your parents still treat you as a kid when you come home. So it's all been a very, very, very interesting episode. Another interesting story, news story that I saw this week was two McDonald's customers out of Fort Lauderdale have brought a class action lawsuit against McDonald's, saying that they have hamburgers and cheeseburgers and that there's a price difference in those, right? So you pay a little bit more, like 30 cents for cheese on your cheeseburgers. But when it comes to the quarter pounder, they have a quarter pounder with cheese and then a regular quarter pounder. And if you order the quarter pounder with cheese minus the cheese, you don't get a discount. So that basically when you order, you're getting ripped off, is what they're saying. And of course, McDonald's is saying, of course, we can offer what we want. And just because you don't have an ingredient doesn't mean you get charged less for that. I don't know if that's something that bothers you guys, but I'm the person who always orders the food without the cheese, without the this, without the ham, without, and I still pay the full amount. But I'm kind of used to that. That's the way it is. I don't expect someone to discount my food because of the picky way I eat. But I guess these people are making that claim. And just another class action lawsuit, you know, against a fast food. We see the submarine, remember, from Subway, where it was a foot long and it's really only 11 inches. I mean, it's just craziness. Give us a call here at 981-7200. I had a text this week. I work for a large company. My supervisor just told me that a coworker reported me for sexual harassment. They want to interview me tomorrow. What are my rights and what are my obligations? And this was a very interesting situation. I knew this person who called me, and I represented him before, and I was very surprised. He was very surprised. He didn't know what he had done, and he didn't even know who his accuser was. And so I recommended to him that he ask his company, who is the accuser and what are they saying about it? I want to know before I go into this meeting what I'm being charged with. I if I can bring in emails or text or something to support my position, I'd like to know that. I told him that if he was being accused, that he might be fired. And this day and age, when people are accused of sexual harassment, they usually don't take a chance and they fire you. And the employer is allowed to do that. The employer is allowed to fire you, even if they're wrong about the sexual harassment, even if it was just made up, even though it was a misunderstanding, maybe it was some innocent comment. The employer, because you're an employee at will, is allowed to fire you. But I told him to find out as much as possible beforehand, then be very polite, answer the questions as best you can, and hopefully it would be resolved in favor of your situation. But again, in this day and age, I am finding that employers really are not taking any chances at all, and I guess I don't really blame them, because if you don't do anything about it as an employer, the next time it happens, the employee then has a right to sue the employer for sexual harassment because they didn't do anything to ameliorate the situation. Let's see. I've got another one. Oh, okay. I have a friend, actually, who's in the media, who was bitten by a dog in her condo building, and it caused a nice little scar on her leg. She didn't want to bring a lawsuit, but she was very upset because this it happened in her condo building, and apparently the neighbor who had the dog. The dog was a kind of a nasty dog, and it had attacked a couple of other dogs in the building. And she lets the dog run around without a leash on, and so the dog bit my lady here. So she brought a lawsuit, and she's going to settle it. But what she wanted was the management company to do something about it, to maybe make some rules that this dog has to be muzzled, or this dog has to be on the leash, or the dog cannot be going up and down the elevators when everyone else is doing the same thing. And I told her that she should approach the management company, and she should talk to them about it, because you don't want the management company to be sued, because what happens in that situation, that might be passed on as a cost to the people who own the condo building. So everyone has the same goal in mind, which is to keep the building safe, not to be sued, and not to have assessments increase unnecessarily. So that was my advice to her. I'm going to be taking more of your calls here, 312-981-7200. If you have questions about divorce, criminal law, news stories you've seen, I'll be happy to send you in the right direction. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
And now, from the files of crazy criminals, legal loonies.
This trial is a travesty of a mockery of a sham, of a mockery of a travesty of two mockeries of a sham.
Daffy defendants. And bumbling burglars. The Karen Conti Show presents Presumed Ignorant.
Welcome back. And this is the time where I find the goofy news stories and the ignorant criminals. This one comes from Berlin, all the way across the water. Police were called to investigate a domestic disturbance. And due to a call from a neighbor, the police arrived and found a 22-year-old man arguing with a parrot. Yes, he was arguing with the parrot. He said to the police that he was very annoyed with the bird, which belonged to his girlfriend. The police say the parrot couldn't speak, but the parrot could bark. That's the news story. Yes. Anyway, give us a call here. We're taking legal questions. We're talking about news stories. Anything you want to talk about, legal or otherwise, I'm here to talk. 312-981-7200. Barb, you've been holding. Thank you for holding. It's Karen Conti. What is your legal question? Oh, legal question. Okay. Hi, Barb.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, there
I'm
you
here.
Go.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi. How responsible are parents for their children's behavior?
Okay, that's a big question. Like, what do you mean in particular? Anything in particular you mean? Like, what are they liable criminally? Are they liable monetarily?
I'll tell you what kind of leads this to my mind. That what if, you know, with all these school shootings, parents have not taken good care of their guns, so the kids have gotten them. So the parents have been negligent in taking care of their guns, which has enabled the kids to get them. So I'm thinking maybe the parents should be locked up.
You know, this is, you're right. I totally agree with you. And because it's not a surprise anymore. In fact, it's almost a surprise when we don't have a school shooting in a week. And I even see little news stories where there's a school shooting where two people die or two people are injured, and it's not even, doesn't even make headlines. You know, one of the interesting things, I looked into this topic, and interestingly, there are not a lot of laws on the books across the states that require guns to be safely kept. And when I say that, I think there's only one state, I want to say it's Vermont or Connecticut, that requires adults to lock up their guns. Okay, only one state. So that basically we're all free to have our guns unlocked. But there are laws on the books that require parents and adults to keep their gun in a safe place, but usually isn't specified what that means. So that leaves a lot of leeway in how prosecutors will charge. And what happens, Barb, as I follow this issue, is that let's just say a kid takes a gun and hurts himself or a sibling. Usually the prosecutors don't want to charge the parent because their parents are obviously upset and they're remorseful and they've been punished enough. But in the issues here where you're seeing a kid take the gun, the parents may have some reason to believe the kid is unstable or has issues. The kid takes the gun and goes to the school and shoots third parties. I think that the police are going to be charging the parents now. I really do think that that's going to happen if it's possible. What I would like to see, and I don't know how you guys feel about it, because I know, I mean, I'm not anti-gun because I know we have our Second Amendment. The Supreme Court has spoken, and I'm not saying we should not have guns, but I think if you're a parent and you have a gun, you have an obligation to safekeep it. And I don't mean just put it under your mattress because kids know where the gun is, not just on top of the refrigerator because they can get up there. But I'm talking about put it in a locked place that the children can't get into. I don't know how you feel about that. Barbara, are you on board with that?
Very definitely. And in fact, I think that should be part of the law that gets pushed. People, yes, have the right to own guns. But they also have the obligation and responsibility to keep them locked up and safe when they're not using them.
The other thing that I hear all the time, Barbara, I'm going to put you on hold and finish up this conversation, is that there are people who think that it should be mandatory if you have a gun that you have gun insurance. Now, I know that the gun owners of the world aren't going to like that, but they, and how is that going to help people? If your kid is shot in a school, what do you care if the parent has $100,000 of insurance? What's that going to cover, and who cares your child is dead? But supposedly that might make parents more safe because the insurance companies might say this coverage only is valid if you have a gun lock and if you have a gun safe and if you take certain precautions, and if you don't, this isn't going to cover whatever problems arise because of the gun. So that's a thought. I'm not sure I advocate that. I'm not sure if that would make a difference, but I think it's something we should all consider. Michael, welcome to WGN.
Okay. Yes, I would like to know why we're not holding, for example, in that police or the school shooting, I should say, the police officer who did not and ignored his duty and performing his duty and protecting those students. Why is he not being charged with dereliction of duty?
This is the Parkland shooting you're referring to, and it was the police officer who was assigned to the school to, in effect, basically stop what was what ended up happening, right?
Right, correct. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past the prosecutors to still be thinking of that. I'm not sure if they're still investigating it, if they're putting the story together. Maybe they're looking at videos. Maybe they're interviewing people who may have witnessed this. You think they would have charged him if they were going to charge him. But I do think that because it's a very unique issue and it's not one that you see very often, that they may be doing their due diligence. And just so you know what the law is, it's very difficult to sue police just because police are the city, they're the municipality, and there's immunity. There's qualified, we call it qualified immunity, which dates back to the days of the king when the king couldn't be sued. And so as a result,
I'm not talking about civil lawsuits. I'm talking about prosecution.
Right. And I'm
criminal action.
And what I'm saying is it's even harder to bring criminal charges than civil responsibility. So if you can't even sue him civilly, then it would be very difficult to sue to charge him. But in this case, and I did want to make this point, this police officer was tasked with the very particular goal of preventing school shootings. I mean, this is what the guy was supposed to do. He was given that job. And when you're given a job, you have a higher duty. And in that case, I think it's possible that he could still be charged with something, if not manslaughter, something similar to that. And I wouldn't be surprised if the prosecutors are still trying to figure out whether they can do that. But I agree with you. This was a pretty egregious.
Yeah, I don't, as long as that Broward County Sheriff is still there, I don't think that's going to happen.
And
in my mind, he's just as guilty.
Yeah. Thank you for the call, yeah. Mike. We'll be taking your calls, 312-981-7200. I've got a bunch of people on the line. Please hold, and when we come back, we'll be talking more legal talk and otherwise on the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. It's Karen Conti. We'll be taking your questions all the way through till 9 o'clock. So give us a call here, 981-7200. Chris, you're on line two. Welcome to WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Okay, it's relating to an estate trust. My mom recently passed, and she had a business checking account and also a CD at a bank that she had made me co-owner and signer of about 8 years ago. And she said if something ever happened to her, that I needed to go and get the CD out and put it in another interest-bearing account. So she passed away, and I went to the bank, and it's under a, she's a realtor, and it was set up as a corporate account for the CD, and she had a business account as well, and the bank told me I'm the owner of it, that I can withdraw it, and since I'm the owner of it, but now it's come in dispute with my sister, who happens to be the executor who set up her, she's an accountant, so I'm just wondering, if the account was not in a trust, am I entitled to take that money out even though I'm not named? It wasn't set up, no beneficiary. It's just I'm the owner of the account.
Yeah,
basically.
This is a little complicated because I would probably need to look at your documentation, and I'd probably need to look at the trust and will that your mom created, and I probably would have a state lawyer look at it because I'm not an estate lawyer. But let me give you some general guidance, and I would really recommend in this case, because you don't want to start World War III with your family. That's the last thing that you want. It's the last thing that your mom wanted, right? So you need to do the exact right thing here. So let me just tell you generally how this works. If you are the owner of the account, does that mean that your name was on it? Is that how she had it? So she had you as a survivor on these accounts?
Well, just a co-owner. The bank tells me the only documentation they have was she was listed as president, and when she signed me as owner, it listed me as secretary, and they're saying at this bank that's all they need to show that I am the owner of the account, that I am able to close the account withdraw money. I mean, I haven't, so I just want to make sure that, you know.
You know, just again, I can't give you exact legal advice because I haven't looked at anything, right? So I'm just telling you that generally speaking, there are some things that are outside of the estate, meaning that if you have, like, let's just say there was a house with your name on it and your mother died, well, then you would own that house and the estate plan would have nothing to do with that. Same as a life insurance policy. If you were the beneficiary of a life insurance policy, you would get that money regardless of whether or not you were named in the will at all or that anyone else had a right. So it seems to me that this might fall into that category in that your name was on it, or at least you were an owner by the terms of the bank's information, and that you're entitled to take it. But again, I would just maybe spend a couple $100 and have a lawyer look at it and make sure that you're doing this correctly, and then have the lawyer quickly write a one paragraph letter saying you are entitled to these funds. They are not in the estate. They don't belong to any of the other beneficiaries, just so you can send it to your family and say, this is what I did, and this is what, and this is the appropriate thing to do. And if you want a referral for someone, please send me an email and I'll put you on hold, and I'm going to give out that information for you, Chris, and for anyone else who might be interested in contacting me. And that is 312-332-7800. Or better yet, send me an email at WGN@AskKarenConti.com. WGN@AskKarenConti.com. Give me a call here. I have lots of time. We got all the way till 9 o'clock. We'll be taking your calls, 312-981-7200. I had a texter who texted me a very good question. Can a sitting president be indicted? This is a very interesting question because we don't quite know the answer. If you look online and you look at all the experts who opine about these types of things, there's a lot of disagreement about this. Some experts, some scholars who are probably more well-read than I am in these kinds of legal topics, will say no, because you just can't indict a sitting president. Some people say yes, and there's some argument that when Richard Nixon was in office and they sent a subpoena asking for the tapes, the Watergate tapes and the like, that the Supreme Court ordered him to produce those, and that is somewhat precedent in the to the argument that a president is not immune from all kinds of civil and criminal issues while they're sitting as president. Also, we had the Bill Clinton issue. We all remember that, where he had to sit for a deposition in the Paula Jones case, which was a civil case that related to his conduct before he was president. And the courts all said that, yes, he does have to sit for that deposition. And that was one of the reasons he perjured himself. And that was one of the reasons he was impeached. So there is precedent that presidents are not completely immune, but there's also precedent to say that presidents are generally deemed to be doing very important things, right? They're the leader of the free world. They're conducting foreign affairs. They're keeping our world safe. They're keeping our country safe. They're the head of the military. So you don't want to involve presidents in indictments, you don't want to involve them in lawsuits, you don't want to involve them in things that would distract them, not only from their job, but it would distract the country from what is going on, and maybe even other countries, to make us look like we're not safe and we're not stable. So my guess is with the Supreme Court that's sitting right now is that if for some reason Donald Trump was indicted, and I'm not saying he's going to be, and I doubt that he will be actually, but if he were to be indicted, it would go all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I think it would probably be thrown out. And I think that the remedy that the U.S. Attorney's Office has in any investigation is going to be, let's just say, worst case scenario for Donald Trump, they find obstruction of justice, that he did some things to obstruct the investigations that were going on, or the fact that there may have been tampering with the election, that he didn't have any responsibility, but maybe he obstructed justice in the investigation. If that's the case, I think the U.S. attorney gives the Congress all of the information. The Congress will then have the opportunity to impeach him. And let's just say that he is impeached, they would have to have their vote, and that would happen in a political fashion. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no beyond a reasonable doubt. It's just an impeachment based upon a vote. And at that point, once he's out of the office, there would be a decision made whether or not he would be subject to an indictment. So that's, to me, how this would go. And I really doubt we're going to get that far. I think that this investigation is very thorough. I think it's going to show some interesting things. It may or may not implicate Donald Trump, but I just don't see that we're going to have a president who is sitting in the office being indicted. I just don't see that happening. I have one other question that I saw on the text screen. Let me see where it is here. Okay. I started a job at a large supermarket chain. I'm supposed to get breaks when I leave the register. Customers ask for help and I get no break. I can't drink water at the register, so when I do get a break, I need to use the bathroom. I can't drink water at the register, so when I do get a break, I drink so long that I need to use the bathroom. Okay, so these are issues relating to employment. These are issues relating to the job laws that the state of Illinois has. There are federal laws and state laws when it comes to workforce. And those are laws that are overtime and time and a half and breaks and things like that. And so there are rules about breaks, and you can go to the Illinois Department of Labor and you can see what their rules are. And you do get breaks and you get paid breaks and you don't have to take them, but the employer must allow you to take them. So you should look at those laws and figure out exactly what you get and when you start and how many minutes you get to do that. And I think you just go to your employer and you nicely say, I need this break. It's important for me to take this break. I'm not being allowed this break, and that it does violate the law. People ask me, well, what happens if the employer fires you for these things? And this happens. That's the problem with enforcing your rights in a way, because you are in a very weak position in the workplace, especially if you're working in a supermarket chain. My guess is you're not getting paid huge amounts of money. So if you were to be fired, that's the last thing you want, and that's the last thing you can afford is to hire a lawyer to pursue your rights while you're out of work. So sometimes you need to, just look for another job if your situation is bad, or kindly and nicely remind the employer of your rights. That's the best best advice I can give you. Another texter last week texted me, I work for a large manufacturing company. I hurt my arm on the job. I have no problem with the workers' compensation system took care of me, but the coworker had the same injury and they are offering him more money. How do these things get calculated and do I have to have a lawyer? Well, in workers' comp, you are very limited in what you get for these injuries. It's not like a personal injury case where you get all kinds of pain and suffering and permanent damage and things like that. They're very limited, and they're really limited by what your salary is. I know that's weird, but if you break an arm, it's worth a certain number of weeks of pay. That's a strange way to calculate, but that's the way they do it. So you may think that someone has the same injury and they're getting more money, but it could be that they have a higher rate of pay and therefore they're entitled to more. On the other hand, you're not entitled to the same settlement as anyone else in your law, in your employer, in your job. But maybe the other side, maybe the other employee had a lawyer who was being more forceful. And if you have any kind of serious injury on the workplace, it's always good to have a lawyer. There's no question that you get a better result. Even when you pay the lawyer some fees to get that result for you, it's better to hire a lawyer. And if you need one, you can always call me. Keep up the calls here. We'll be taking them through the 9 o'clock hour, 981-7200. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show. Welcome back. Now is the time to get in your questions and your calls on any topic you might have. 981-7200. Put down that grilling stuff. It's really not that nice outside. Come inside and listen to my show and give me a call. You know, Roger, I wanted to ask you a question about one of your news stories. The news stories about the quality, the air quality. Is this a new stat or is this?
We've had these air quality indexes. They used to call them ozone warning days.
All right. That's what
you remember those?
They're changing the
naming of it, I guess, because it's not just the ozone. There's other particulates and dirt in the air, and the failure of a strong wind in the area to move the area around, circulate it through different levels of the atmosphere. So it's just kind of like a stagnant front that's over us right now, which allows a lot of the particulates and the exhaust and everything to just sit here.
Just sit here and hang out.
Right, and yeah, that's what's making the air so bad.
I was just reading an article about, I think it was Earth Day or something, but it was about how the lion's share of this world has problems with air quality. Mm-hmm. And when I traveled in Southeast Asia, in Vietnam and Cambodia, where they don't really have a lot of standards when it comes to emissions. And you've got all of these cars with serious problems. And again, you have the heat and you have all the stagnation and you have dirty water. And these people are very sick people. They don't live very long and they have lots of cancer and they have lots of diseases, largely relating to the quality of air. And, you know, most Americans, we take things for granted, and we've always had pretty strong laws regarding the air and air quality and emissions, and a lot of people look down and say, well, that's too much, we shouldn't be that regulated. But I don't know, I'm kind of glad that we are, and I would hope that we'd continue to be regulated in that regard, because there's nothing you can do about dirty air. It's not like you can even stay inside, because when you're inside, you're breathing it too, maybe even worse.
Yeah, so. And I'm always have always remembered seeing pictures, even many decades ago, of people in Asia walking around with hospital masks on during the day.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, do you want to live your life like that here in the United States?
Yeah.
And no, it's just not healthy at all.
No, it's not. I had a very nice texter who wanted to remind me of something, and it's a very good point. I was talking about the issue of the employee who needed to take breaks and was not giving breaks by the boss. And this is a very good point. If you are a union member, your union should handle that. If you're an employee at will, you don't have a union, then my advice stands. But if that's what your union is for, your union is supposed to protect you, and you should have people you can go to and say, I'm not getting my break. Can you make sure it's enforced, not just for me, but other people? And there's probably very strict provisions in your labor contract that protect you. And that's the best way to get it done. And thank you for that reminder. Anyway, I've got a topic that is very much of interest to me. And that is, you probably all saw it this week, the NFL has approved a national anthem policy, which requires players to stand if they are on the field. And if they are not on the field, they can choose maybe to be in the locker room. But if they're on the field and they show some sort of disrespect, which is really not specified, the policy would subject the players to certain fines. And again, I don't know exactly what those fines are. I'd like to have everyone weigh on this. I'm going to ask Roger. I'm going to ask my producer, Ben. I'm going to ask my husband, Jerry. Do you think this is a good policy? Do you think that the NFL had to do something about this? Ben, I'll start with you. No? Okay. Jerry, how about you, Jerry? He's talking to a listener. Okay.
No. First of all, I think Americans should all read the First Amendment. Only the government cannot restrict freedom of speech. It has to be a governmental entity. And Karen, you've explained this 36 times on the air.
Yeah, and I hear, you know, you're right. We're sitting there watching all of these sports guys come up and say, it's my First Amendment right. Well, yes, you have a First Amendment right. And the government, as Jerry said, the government cannot stop you from talking or saying things that it doesn't like. But this is not the government. This is the NFL. This is a private company. This is a private organization. And to protect its brand, to protect what it wants to do, it certainly can make rules.
Yeah, you know, and I think part of the problem is the national polls show that the majority of people, not the vast majority, but a solid majority of people just want the people to stand and the players to stand during the national anthem. And, you know, it's based on keeping your sponsors, keeping the revenue coming in. I think if 90% of the people said, we don't want you to impose this, let them do whatever they want, then they would fall in line, because it's a business. And businesses look at their bottom line, and some of them have shareholders. Most of them are privately owned, I believe. I could be wrong in that. But, I think that you need to pick your battles.
Yeah, I kind of feel this way. I'm a big national anthem person. I'll stand, I'll put my hand on my heart, I'll sing off key like the best of them. And I really respect our country, and I respect the fact that we can say what we want to say. I also respect the idea that someone can do something else and kneel. You know, these people aren't, you know, they're not setting off fireworks, they're not being disruptive, they're just doing something quietly that is showing their protest. I guess I don't have a problem with that. Why do I care what he's doing? Do I care? I mean, why should I even give him any you know, attention for that. If he wants to do it and he feels that's appropriate, or maybe he's got a religious objection to something that's in that song, I don't know. I don't really care. And so now we have these rules, and now these rules are going to be enforced or not. And are there going to be fines? Are the fines going to be collected? What if the star players all decide to kneel now that we have fines? So now there's going to be fines collected. I don't know. I just feel like it was something that I think they felt like they had to do because of, like you said, the money and the revenues and all of that. But you're just putting too much fuel on that fire in my regard. But if you have a question about that or you have a comment, call me, or we're going to be talking about it in the next segment. 312-981-7200. You're listening to WGN.
We got too far this time, but I'm dancing on the Valentine. I tell you, somebody's fooling around.
We're talking about the NFL approving the national anthem policy. And I want to take a roundtable here on all the and what you guys think about it. Is this a good idea to have a policy? And again, I wanted to be clear that the players, I guess it's not really the players who are going to be fined. It's going to be the teams who are going to be fined for the players who actually do this kind of disrespect by kneeling or the like. But Ben, do you have anything that you want to say about it?
I like where Jerry was at before we had to go to break. I completely agree that something should be done. They're employees. No matter how you break it down, they are employees. They are extremely well-paid employees, but they are still employees. And if their boss says, you got to do this, then they should be doing that. Outside of that, you know, I think they are so impressionable on our youth and everything, and to set that standard of it's okay not to be respectful for something that so many people in our country find to be, you know, an important moment in sports. As a coach of 20-something years, I always made sure my athletes were on point for the national anthem. So,
yeah, and I really respect that opinion, and I feel that way myself personally. But I guess I'm just thinking, if someone wants to make a statement by kneeling, it's not like they're flipping the bird, it's not like they're doing something completely disruptive, and they want to make a statement about how they think something is unfair. I mean, I don't know. I'm not African American. I don't have those issues, but I respect someone who wants to do that. You know, I guess I just don't think it's that big of a deal, but I agree with you from a legal standpoint and from a financial standpoint. They have to do something about it because they don't want to lose revenue. They've got to protect their brand, and they can't have these players running the team, right? Roger, do you have anything other than what we've talked about?
Well, I try not to upset the apple cart too much, but I agree on a couple of points. One, it is a business. National Football League, all sports teams and leagues are businesses. They're in the business of making money and paying employees. We work for a company. We get paid to do a job, and in the process of doing our job, there are rules that we must obey. If we do not obey those rules, we do not work for the company. And so that, given that flat piece of evidence, the protest when they were told to stop doing it, and they continued to do it, the players throughout the league, then the teams, the owners, have the right to take action. And they have. They have now come out with a rule saying if you take a knee or in any other way do not honor the national anthem during that time in an appropriate manner, then you have this option of staying in the locker room during the national anthem, or coming out and standing during the national anthem. And here are the fines. Well, New York Jets owner has already said that if any of his team's players violate that agreement, he will pay the fine. He has come right out and said he'll pay the fine for them. So he's siding with the players who feel as though taking a knee or in any other way showing
Their concerns with the treatment of, and this is what it comes from, it's not a disgrace of the flag or the national anthem or America. This originally was a protest to show anger about the treatment of African Americans by police departments in the United States, what was considered unfair treatment. And it has been turned around.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you because it's how we define it. If you define it as disrespect, or do you define it as a peaceful statement that there is, we have a an issue here in this country with this problem, this perceived problem, or this problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, with the people on one side are going to call it one thing, and the other people are going to call it the other
sure.
thing.
Sure.
And who am I to say that that problem and that issue is not important to those people?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I just it's going to be interesting how this plays out, because it's either going to put fuel on the fire
mm-hmm.
or we're going to have people sit in the locker room and come out after the national anthem.
Right.
And that's just going to be the way it is.
And I think he took his spot. He took a national spotlight. I think people who have that ability to make a statement to a larger group or a larger part of society will take that time. I mean, how many times have you heard at awards programs, the Academy Awards, winners come up and they make statements about things they think are wrong with society? They have used their large soapbox to be able to do that. Well, that's what I think he did, Kaepernick did, when he took a knee during the national anthem. Now, are there other ways to do this? Probably. Could he have a similar effect doing it outside of the football game because of his standing? He was quarterback of an NFL team. Sure. So, I mean, this is a discussion that I think has to continue.
Well, and I think it's interesting that you brought up the idea of people in Hollywood, because I have seen that it used to be that the Sean Penns of the world could say all kinds of stuff politically and people would go still see the movie. But I hear more and more now actors who are saying things, and when people don't agree now politically, they boycott movies, and
right.
they
mm-hmm.
and they say, I don't like him because he's politically opposite to what I believe in, and therefore I'm not going to go see his movies. I can't believe anything. I can't believe him as an actor because I don't like him politically, and I can't separate the two.
Right.
Whereas before, you know, you saw whatever Charles Heston, I think he was a big pro-gun person.
Right.
No
he
one
was
cared.
President of the NRA,
no
I believe, for a while.
No one cared about that. Yeah. He made movies, and people saw them, whether you liked guns or you didn't like guns.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a deal breaker. But I think we're in a different world now where we have people who are very angry about political things, and they don't want to hear anyone else's opinion but their own, and
I want to call it the Twitter world,
right?
Because back when, at the time you were talking about, we didn't have social media back then. You heard it, and you maybe complained to your neighbor or your coworkers at work, but what voice did you have publicly?
Well, it's
now
a,
you do.
It's a risky thing to
yeah.
do, and I just heard an actress talk about how she's an anti-Trump person, but she says, you know, there's 50% of people who like Donald Trump, so I need to have more people go see my movies than just 50% of the population. And so she says, I just keep my mouth shut. And I understand that. I mean, you want to use your fame, you want to use your influence. It's a good thing to do. And maybe what we're going to be seeing more now is celebrities using their money to do it as opposed to using their mouth to do it. That would make sense. Jerry, do you have a final comment?
Yeah, Karen, I think you touched on a salient point. And let's look at it from the point of the view of the audience. Remember, sports are not about sports. They're about entertaining people. I remember years ago there was a very famous singer whose name I won't mention, but that singer would start her show with a 15-minute political rant. People in the audience who were paying $1,500 to sit in the first 10 rows were screaming at her to shut up and sing. I don't care what your opinion is, because your opinion is no better than mine. Now, I happen to agree with the cause of why the NFL players are kneeling. Yes, I totally agree with that. But you know what? We're spending our hard-earned money to be entertained, not to be lectured to, not to be shamed, and not to be preached to. That's what ticks me off the most.
Gary, I totally agree with you. Look at how many NFL players are using their popularity, you know, in non-for-profit organizations for positive things. You know, the most recent being several of the hurricane relief efforts.
Absolutely. And I had a texter who wanted to know about Kaepernick, and, you know, he brought this lawsuit saying he's blackballed. Is this going anywhere? You know, without having read the lawsuit and done the analysis, I don't think he is. I think that the, you know, sports franchise can hire you or not hire you based upon your whole package, whether you're a good player, whether you're a good person. And as you all know out there, when you're applying for a job, you don't think your employer Googles you. I do. When I employ people, I Google them. I want to see what they have on Facebook. I want to see what they have on Twitter. I want to know what I'm getting into, because it's very important for any employer to have employees who have good reputations so you can do your business the way you need to do it. Anyway, give us a call here. We're going to be taking your calls all the way to 9 o'clock, 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Phone lines are open. Give me a call, 981-7200. Any legal question you might have, I'm going to get to the phones. I know a couple people have been holding, but I want to just read a couple of these texts. And this is on the issue of the NFL rules about kneeling during the national anthem. I just want to get these out here. Think of it this way. When one pledges the allegiance to the flag, they're pledging allegiance to the freedom the flag represents, one of which is free speech. I agree with you on that one. Let's see. You're an American citizen. When the national anthem is played, you stand, remove your hat, place your right hand over your heart, period. Anything else is wrong. I wish people were as concerned about the players who commit criminal acts as they are about them standing for the anthem. I might agree with that one, because you're right. If you're actually interested in your brand and the value of your brand and all of those things, when you have athletes who are doing bad things, is that a morality act that we should be paying attention to? What the statement from these athletes is, says a 217 texter, societal norms and rules don't apply to me, and that attitude is what leads police having to go out and arrest people in the first place. I don't agree with that. I don't agree that by kneeling you're saying that you're rejecting social norms. I think that's a protest that is respectful, and that doesn't have anything to do with why police are arresting different kinds of people. From a 708 area code, my mom has an 80-year-old friend who won't go see Book Club, that's the movie with Jane Fonda, because she does not like Jane Fonda's politics some 40 years ago. And I remember that. She was in Vietnam and she was protesting the war, and she did some things that were disrespectful. A lot of people thought that at the time, and I know a lot of people don't like her and they won't see her movies. And finally, why aren't more media outlets focusing on the good that J.J. Watt does, like paying for all the funerals for the tragedy that took place in Texas? And, you know, you're right. There is there are many, many, many celebrities and athletes who are doing wonderful things, and they should all get credit for those things. All right, let's go to the phones, 981-7200. Jim, I know you've been holding. Thank you. This is Karen Conti.
Yes, I have a question about... my sister is laying in the hospital, and she's in a coma, and they give two of my sisters a HEPA number at the hospital to check on her condition, and one of them will call, and they won't give her no information.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear this. So your sister is in a coma in the hospital, and one of your other siblings is calling to get information, and they won't give the information?
Right. And they give two of my sisters the HEPA number or whatever they call it.
Okay.
And one of them calls, and they won't give her no information.
Okay. I'm not sure that this is a legal issue, and I don't know what the hospital's policy is, but it could be that there's just a limited number of people who can call in for this information, in that it would take the nurses too much time to maybe explain it to everybody, and that there may be... Maybe what needs to happen is one person in your family should get the information and be able to relay it to everybody else. Again, I don't know why they're doing it. Have they explained it to you that they can't give out information to too many people in the family?
Well, they had said that. That's why they had only given two of them the numbers.
Okay. And again, I kind of understand that, just because if you got all these people calling into the nurse station, that would impair their impact their ability to do their job. So yeah. Well, and I'm sorry to hear about it, and I hope she's okay. All right, Jim, thank you.
She's not. We're waiting you know?
Okay.
It's been a week. We're waiting. I don't know what we're waiting for.
Yeah.
Like, when I was here, the lady, the nurse, told me to go in there. She can hear what we say. Well,
okay, Jim.
You know?
Jim, I'm sorry, but yeah, I'm going to get to some other callers now. But I mean, I'm sorry to hear this, but I think the hospital probably has a right to do that, and maybe, like I said, you should figure out a way to transmit that information among the family members so everybody knows about your sister. John, welcome to WGN. What's your legal question?
Hi, Karen. How are you this evening?
Good, John.
Good. I'm from Chicago, but I happen to be in the state of Georgia now.
Oh.
Looking after my folks. So I have a situation where my father, who was diagnosed with Parkinson's some years ago, 2015 to be exact, afterwards purchased a vehicle on behalf of someone. The following year, by which the family was not aware of, we recently became aware of it due to some ACH debits from his account, one of his accounts.
Okay.
So the question becomes, now that we are aware of it, do we move forward with filing a police report claiming the abuse of the elderly because my father doesn't want us to do so?
Okay, let me just ask you this. So he bought a car or signed for a car for somebody else while you think he was incapacitated. Is that what you're saying?
If you think in terms of, in medical chronological terms, that's my thought, my take on it. But according to our family attorney, he did raise the question of capacity. I'm thinking that at that time, even though he might have been diagnosed with it, consent still may have been okay,
right?
At that point,
yes. To show that someone didn't have the intent to gift something or buy something is you know, that's not the hardest thing to do. And if he's got Parkinson's, I know that there are some mental issues relating to Parkinson's, but it's a physical disease, and he could have been maybe not in his best physical condition, but he could still have had his mental capacities to make that decision. And again, mm-hmm. you know, I hate to see these things because there's always people who are predators when they see people who are sick, when they see people who are dying, and they take advantage of that. And mm-hmm. maybe they prey upon their weaknesses, but that might be a hard thing to show. If you're going to try to get out of the contract, you're going to have to also prove probably that the company or the loan company knew about your dad's issue, not just that he was incapacitated, but they knew about it and shouldn't have sold him the car. So, you know,
I
wish you luck in that, and you can try your best, but my guess is you're probably not going to win on that. So.
Okay, and that was our family attorney's conclusion as well. But in that regard, what about the issue of moving forward with filing a police report?
And you certainly can do that. And there's usually your attorney general. I don't know if you're talking about Georgia or Illinois, but there's always an attorney general or state's attorney division on elder abuse, and you can file a report. Again, these people are inundated with claims like this, and unless you can show mm-hmm. that there was some serious advantage taken of your father, they're probably not going to prosecute. But certainly go do that. There's no reason for you not to if you feel strongly that this person did something wrong. Okay?
I see.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you, and I hope your dad's okay. We have 15 more minutes for legal calls. Give us a call, 312-981-7200, or text to 981-7200. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. You have 15 minutes, or about 10 minutes, actually, to finish up your calls, 981-7200. I'm a practicing lawyer. I've been practicing for 31 years. And if you ever have a question that you don't want to talk to me about on the air, you can always call me at the office. That number is 312-332-7800. Or you can email me at WGN@AskKarenConti.com. Jerry, you had a question about something, some news story this week?
Yeah, I caught something on the news this morning, actually. It's the new Melissa McCarthy movie, and I love Melissa McCarthy. She's hysterical. I think it's called Happy Time Murders, And she's a detective in New York, and she's assigned right. as her partner a puppet, who's actually kind of a Muppet. But the movie is rated R. It's got, you know, drugs, sex, violence, and rock and roll in it. And I guess there's a lawsuit pending now coming from Sesame right. Street, because the tagline in the movie says, "No Sesame, all street."
Right.
And I think they're suing because they believe their brand is being besmirched somehow.
Yeah, yeah. This is an interesting lawsuit. And at first, you know, I thought it was kind of funny. And then I realized, you know, that they might have a point here. Now, this kind of law is a very niche kind of law. And this is an area I don't practice in. But what I do know is that Sesame Street has a right to protect its brand. It has a right to protect its trade name and whatever copyright and whatever interests that they have protected. And I'm sure they protected them greatly. And I'm sure that they have to enforce this all the time, because you don't want to let your brand be diluted. That's the word they use, diluted. So the issue is, could this be a parody? I mean, you can always make fun of something. Just because you have the name Sesame Street doesn't mean someone couldn't make a joke about Sesame Street on the Tonight Show or something like that, or to do something funny, or to write a song that's a parody to a Sesame Street song. But here, what's interesting is that my understanding is that the Muppets, what's his name, Henson or Hanson?
Jim Henson.
Jim Henson.
Jim Henson.
I think is it his son? Or
his son.
His son was the creator of these puppets, which sort of look like Sesame Street puppets. And so the issue is, could people, by reading that tagline that said, "No Sesame, all street," could they actually confuse the movie with something that has to do with Sesame Street, and could be people sending their kids to go see this movie, or could this dilute the brand? And so my guess is that this might be something where they should cease and desist using that tagline and just hopefully settle it and make it go away, because you know, you see these companies do this all the time. In fact, Jerry, you and I were in New Orleans, and just yesterday we were in New Orleans, and we saw a T-shirt that someone had designed that said NOLA, which is, of course, New Orleans, Louisiana. And it looked like the same writing as Coca-Cola. So it said NOLA like Coca-Cola, and it had some tagline about whatever it was. And you pointed it out to me and said, you know, is that something that Coca-Cola could stop them from using? And my guess would be perhaps, because the way that it looked, you knew right away instinctively that this was the Coca-Cola kind of trade name, and they were trying to imitate it. Now, was it a parody? Was it to be funny? Or are they making money on using someone's trade name and their trademark? Very, very, very interesting. Okay, let's go. Let's go to the texters. To Karen Conti, I have a relative who has been abusive in various ways for decades. After years of mostly peace, he is now beginning to threaten me again. What do I have to prove to get a court order of protection against him? How long does it take, and where would I start? Okay, well, I'm sorry to hear that. This person is a relative, so it has to be a relative or someone you share a home with or in a domestic relationship with. So it probably would qualify for an order of protection. You have to prove that that person is doing something that is harming you, whether it's physical or mental or stalking or something that is putting you in fear and intimidating you. And so you would start by going to the county court where this person lives or where you live, and you would either could fill out the paperwork for an order of protection, okay, a temporary order of protection. Generally speaking, there are people there who help you get that order of protection, and they help you fill out the forms, and then you go before the judge. You should dress accordingly. You go before a judge by yourself or with the advocate, and you will tell the judge of all the things that this person has done, mostly the recent things. The judge may listen to a little bit of the old stuff that happened in the past, but mostly the judge is concerned with immediate issues, things that have happened just recently. And you'll be sworn under oath, and the judge will probably, if the judge feels that it's serious enough, will probably give you a temporary order of protection. That order of protection will then be served on the abusive person, And then in about a couple weeks or 10 days, you're going to be back in court, and he's going to be there if he chooses to be there, and he's going to get to testify about what happened. You're going to get to testify again, and then the judge will decide if there's going to be a permanent order of protection, or we call it a, we'll just say it's a permanent order of protection, meaning it's 2 years, and then at that time, it can either be renewed or it will be dropped. So there's two parts of this. And so the other thing that you can do is to go to your police department and fill out a complaint against him, depending upon how severe it is. If there is an issue of physical abuse, maybe you go to the police department and maybe there's a criminal complaint, and then it can go into the criminal court. But if it's really just abusive conduct, if they're in the house with you and they're threatening you, and those types of things, then I think your best bet is to go to that county court and get that order of protection. But let me tell you and advise you that when you do this, you should be very prepared, and you should have all of the evidence of all of the things that happened to you. You should have the date it happened. You should bring witnesses who may have seen it or heard it. If you have text messages that are threatening in any way, you are to bring those with you, maybe print them out so the judge can see them, and also bring your phone. If you have photographs of injuries or damage, let's say, to a car or a door, if someone put a hand through a door, you're going to want to take pictures of all those things so the judge can understand that you're not making this up and that you're legitimate and that you need that order of protection. And if you have any other questions about that, I'm happy to send you the forms. I'm happy to lead you in the right direction, and you can give me an email at WGN@askkarenconti.com. Let's see. That's all we have in the text. I had a text last week when I was on the show that said it was the divorce decree. So divorce decree says that I get 4th of July visitation, and her husband, as I recall, planned a vacation during that time. Each party had a right to have a vacation, but he planned it on 4th of July. And the question is, what trumps what? Does the 4th of July holiday trump the vacation that ex-husband is planning, or vice versa? Generally speaking, you should look at your decree and it should spell out what trumps what, okay? And usually parents have a right to an extended vacation, a seven-day vacation, or maybe more with a child. But if you have 4th of July and that's your holiday, he should not plan that vacation during that time. He's got to plan it on another time, because that is yours. And generally speaking, that holiday would trump his right to have vacation with the child. Hopefully, you won't have to go to court. Hopefully, you can work it out with him. Hopefully, you can point out that you maybe spoke to a lawyer who said that he needs to find another date, and that this 4th of July vacation time is absolutely yours. So, again, give me a call at the office if you have any questions, 312-981-7200 or WGN@askkarenconti.com. I hope everyone has a lovely Memorial Day weekend. This is Karen Conti on WGN.